Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 756 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and I'm going to be continuing with the chronology today. I'm going to be talking about Harbinger number 9. It's written by Joshua Dysart. We have art by Pierre Perez, colors by Ian Hannon, and letters by Rob Steen. So we saw at the end of last issue the Renegades, which now include Pete Stanchek, Chris Hathaway, Faith Hebert, and Charlene Dupree had gone to recruit another Psyot. They had Torque join the team, or at least Pete unlocked his latent powers. And before they really had a chance to talk to him and let them know kind of what they're up to and what they're up against, they were attacked by Project Rising Spirit. They had a lot of tech, anti-Psyot tech, and their lookout, Faith, who was about a mile away, was not spotted first, but lost her powers first, and basically fell to the ground, used a tree to kind of break her fall, but she was unconscious there, whereas everybody else was sort of centered on the garage that Torque's brother ran, the automotive repair garage, and everybody was sort of pinned down. And there was a big explosion. Pete was able to rescue Chris at the last moment with a shield and keep her from being killed. So those two are together. Charlene's hiding, and Torque is actually attacking these helicopters, kind of reveling in his newfound power. So that's how we left it last issue. This issue starts off, and we get a flashback here. And Faith is narrating, and she's talking about how it seems like her whole life she's been flying one way or the other, and we see this this car accident with a car in midair flipping over in the rain. Apparently, looks like maybe a motorcycle or a 18-wheeler were also involved. Maybe one of them was driving on the wrong side of the road. It's really hard to tell, but we know that Faith was much younger then. She did have her seatbelt on, and she's talking about when it happened. And all throughout these flashbacks, as Faith is narrating, she marks time by pop culture, like movies and TV shows and stuff. So it's kind of interesting and shows her real love for that kind of thing. She's saying that, this happened the same year Mom and Dad took her to see Spider-Man and Attack of the Clones, the year Firefly started. And apparently her parents had a lot of love for that kind of stuff as well, because she said, yeah, they loved that show, but they missed the best of it. And so she survived the accident. As I said, she was pulled from the wreckage, the way she puts it, like Superman carried away in a rocket from a world that might have been. And then we kind of fast forward through time, 10 years later, and she's talking about when Pete gave her powers. She says, my origin story starts here 4 weeks ago, the moment Peter Stanchek touches me. And I'm beginning to think maybe all good things hurt a little bit first, because she is screaming. And we did see that when Pete unlocked her powers. It was very painful. But nobody realized that her powers had been activated at first, even herself. She says, after that, Hera's goons put me in a cell. They didn't think Peter could make me special. And I guess I didn't either right then, but I was wrong. And we see as she's sitting there on the bed, she starts floating. Her eyes start to glow, and she's really excited. Yes, yes, it's happening. And she says, yeah, Peter had totally, unquestionably, completely given her the ability to fly. And she says that she wishes she could put into words how that made her feel. But she's like, you know what? I'm not really a poet. And at that moment, an alarm goes off. And she's thinking, that alarm can't be for me. And she's thinking back to that night, saying it obviously the alarm wasn't for her. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on. And Harada must have sensed that Faith was like her, like them now. And I don't know that that's necessarily true, but again, this is, you know, Faith, and rightly so, she's very focused on herself at this point, of her origin, so to speak. Harada obviously had bigger problems and was in no way monitoring Faith, but again, from her perspective, it seems like maybe that could have been the case, because right then, just as she learned that she had her powers, Livewire shows up and is saying, Miss Hebert, you need to come with me. And again, from Faith's perspective, she's like, okay, Harada must have known I had powers, because right when I learned how to use them, here comes this super sexy female supervillain to come and rescue me. But again, I think it was just Livewire knowing Faith was there and knowing that things were sort of hitting the fan, and not wanting something bad to happen to her. You know, we know at this point Livewire was really beginning to question Harada and the entire mission of the Harbinger Foundation, a lot of its actions and things that it was doing. So as Livewire comes to tell Faith, okay, let's go, Faith is not really listening. She's thinking, okay, this woman's probably here to kill me. And so she just flies out toward Livewire and catches Livewire off guard and flees down the hallway. And Faith is thinking, yeah, if she wasn't here to kill me, maybe they were just going to mind wipe me and send me home. But now that I have powers, yeah, make me a harbinger or kill me. And yeah, I'm not going to allow that to happen. So as Livewire starts to say, I need to get you to safety, again, Faith just, you know, flies off without really listening. It doesn't even really let Livewire finish completing that sentence. And so Faith is thinking back, and she's saying, you know how in origin stories, usually superheroes have to learn how to use their powers? Well, not me. I had this down from the very start. And meanwhile, we see Livewire in the background saying, Faith, no, not that way. She's flying down the hall. Again, Faith is totally lost in her own world. And as easy and instinctual as it was for her to be able to fly, and we do learn later that obviously Faith didn't realize the extent of her powers. We know that later on she's able to kind of extend her field, if you will, and allow other people to fly or use it to levitate objects. So maybe she did have to learn, but at this point, she doesn't even know. She's not even aware of that. She just thinks, yeah, right from the start, instinctual, I can fly. And she does admit, though, that turning was really hard at first. And we see her kind of run into a wall as she tries to turn the corner. And again, totally going the wrong way, too, because Livewire would have, led her to an exit and allowed her to escape much easier. Faith says, just as I was starting to get the hang of it, basically the roof caves in. And again, this is all due to the fight that Harada and Stanchek were having on the top floor of the Harada Towers in Pittsburgh. Then the scene shifts to back to Georgia, the backwoods of Georgia. We're looking at the Torkelson Garage. And again, these PRS gunships, these helicopters, are firing on the Psyots, are firing on the Renegades, keeping them pinned down. And under this heavy fire, Pete is maintaining his force field, and he's saying, I did it, Chris. I telepathically linked up with Charlene, Faith, and Torkelson. I told them to run. And Chris says, okay, great. We got to get out of here too. We'll come back around for them as soon as we can. And Pete lowers his shield for a second, and Chris starts running. But Pete doesn't, and she realizes that quickly and turns around and says, Pete, what are you doing? We have to get out of here. And Pete says, I'm sorry, Chris. Just go find someplace safe. I'll save us. And Chris is pissed. She's like, this isn't what we talked about. This is how you get us killed. You know, they talked about it last issue, that the thing to do is for all of them to run, to scatter, and then regather later. If Pete tries to fight, he's going to end up getting captured. And without Pete, the strongest of them, the others are going to be captured in quick succession or killed. And but Pete, he's kind of overconfident, you know, now that he's sort of made a stand and he's not self-medicating. He has these friends and these people that are relying on him. He has a sort of newfound confidence and purpose. But again, he doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have the tactical experience that he might need to stand up to an organization like PRS. But the overconfidence and the hubris of youth a little bit. And so as he looks up at the two helicopters, they notice him and say, Gray Leader, we've got a visual on Stanchek. And they're ordered to concentrate their fire. And Pete tells him to get ready to rumble. But as he looks up at the helicopters, he sees Tull, that guy, Mr. Tull, who's been chasing him all this time. And he just loses it, right? He this is the guy that for him represents PRS, that represents him being hounded and chased. And so he flies up toward Tull, screaming his name. And as soon as he gets to the helicopter, he goes to punch Tull, and he passes right through him. And we hear a voice over a speaker saying, "Welcome, Peter. I'm a hologram, and this is a trap." And as he's in the helicopter, all of a sudden there are dozens and dozens of tranquilizer darts that are fired at Pete to knock him out. And the helicopters land. Ground troops are dispatched. Torkelson sees his brother, who, when PRS first showed up, went and retrieved a gun to fight back. So he's been killed. And as Tork is standing there in his new body looking down at his brother, he's like, what's going on, Jake? You can't be dead. Stuff like this doesn't happen in Torkhalla, you know, which is the sort of imaginary world that Tork used to sort of dream about, where he was able-bodied and strong and powerful, as opposed to his real body, his real physical body, or that was infirm and you know, much weaker, and you know, he had disability, he couldn't walk. And so he sees his brother there, tears in his eyes. He's trying to understand what's going on. He's like, "Man, how can you be dead? This kind of stuff doesn't happen in Torkhalla. And why are you wearing Aunt Linda's dress? This whole thing is just crazy." And so as he's looking at his brother, the PRS ground troops show up. And before Tork can even attack, he's hit with synaptics, which kind of disrupt his brain patterns. Which then in turn cause his the super powerful physical outer shell that his weaker real body sort of inhabits is disrupted, and he's taken down. The ground troops also surround Charlene Dupree, who's hiding under an old pickup truck, and they're telling her to come out. She's surrounded, and this is a great humorous scene from Dysart here. Charlene lets loose kind of a flare of flame, kind of whoosh, and it shoots out from the bottom of the truck. And then she says, "Did I get any of you all?" And of course not. They were standing too far away. And even if they had been closer, it just wasn't a big enough blast to really do much. It was kind of muffled by the truck. And so they roll in some little synaptic grenades at her, and she's taken prisoner as well. Chris keeps running through the forest, cussing out Peter, "Why are you so stupid? This wasn't the plan that they had." She's captured as well, and obviously it doesn't take much to capture her. You know, just some guys with guns. She doesn't have any powers, and she's captured relatively quickly. So about a mile away from the garage, we see Faith start to regain consciousness after having fallen from the sky. She's a little bruised. She's a little battered. She's wondering what happened. She's like, "Yeah, I saw those helicopters, and as they got closer, they took away my ability to fly, and I fell." And she looks up, and she sees the tree branch that broke, that she was able to grab onto, that kind of broke her fall. And she's thinking, man, she could have been killed, and it's pretty scary. So the other thing Faith has always been really good at is communicating telepathically with Peter. The others haven't really been able to do it. Faith is the only one that can sort of hold a conversation with him. And so she reaches out now with her mind, but all she's getting is some kind of horrible feedback. These distorted echoes of words, "Run, save yourself, it's a trap." And she knows that something's really wrong, like really real life wrong. And as much as she wants to save herself, she's not sure if that's the right way to go. Then we get another flashback to Faith and her grandmother. This is after she's recovered from the injuries she sustained when she was a little girl in the accident. And she's, as I said, with her grandmother, her father's mom, which is who raised her after the accident. And we see her grandmother opening up a closet door, and there's tons of long boxes of comics. And Faith is thinking about how her grandmother had her dad when she was already old, and I'm sure expected to outlive her father. And it makes it kind of sad that her grandmother didn't. And so because of that, Faith thought that, yeah, her grandmother really had the right to be sort of depressed and sad, but that wasn't the kind of person that she was. Instead, she showed Faith how to always look on the bright side of things, especially when stuff is totally hard. And we see her grandmother telling her that all these comics, all these things, the house, everything in it that used to be belong to her parents are now hers. And she has a trick for Faith, a way to keep her parents always there by her side and in her mind. What you need to do is you must keep the things and ideas that made them happy in your heart. And in that way, they'll always be a part of you. So it kind of explains why Faith went so far down the path of pop culture, right? Like, she already liked that kind of stuff. Her parents liked that kind of stuff. And then this advice from her grandmother to keep her parents' memory alive by loving the things that they loved. And you can understand that, you know, especially at that age that Faith was, at the age she was when she lost her parents, you know, maybe six or seven, that she's going to really take that to heart. And that's part of the reason that she's so obsessed with pop culture and enjoys it so much. And, you know, she does enjoy it on its own merits as well, but it gives that extra meaning for her. So Faith goes on to recall that the year that Scott Pilgrim movie came out, her grandmother got dementia, and just a few months ago she has to be put in a special care home at her own request, because in her last few moments of clarity, she started to think that she was a burden on Faith. And Faith is like, you know, she wasn't, I loved her, and but I couldn't save her, and then I was alone. So she's not alone now. You know, she hangs out with these cool kids, the coolest kids she's ever met. They're her friends, and right now they need a hero. And again, just based on Faith and her love of pop culture and just sort of her, I don't know, her demeanor and obviously the way she looks, you know, she's overweight. She's sort of an outsider. She's never been one of the cool kids. She's never been somebody who was on the in crowd. And so you can understand why she'd be so fiercely loyal to these new friends of hers who kind of treat her as an equal. And so as she's stumbling through the woods, thinking that she looks ridiculous, she's wearing dishwashing gloves for Zeus's sake, she heads to the car where they left it when they went to check out the Torkelson garage. And she has something specific in mind that she wants to retrieve. It says, "There it is, the very thing Peter and Chris told me to leave behind, but I couldn't do it. They're too pretty." And we do know that when the renegades attacked one of Harada's outposts and pulled all the information they needed about potential psyops from Rachel, the person at the Harbinger Foundation who's sort of in charge of recruitment, if you can call it that, kidnapping would be another word. When they raided that building in D.C., they stole a bag of uniforms, and Pete and Chris have told her, yeah, we don't want to be wearing those, they're too conspicuous, but right now Faith is the one that's there, and Chris and Pete aren't. And so she's thinking about how this fabric is some sort of crazy supervillain stuff, and it's really tough, and in slimming even, she's like, sue me, you know, I want to look good, and why would I take the time to change in a crisis like this? This is something that Faith knows, right? She's a fan of comics, she's a fan of TV shows and movies and that kind of stuff, and she knows that while it may seem stupid to a lot of people, the way you look breeds confidence, right? It gives you confidence, and right now she needs confidence, she needs strength, she needs some ability to believe in herself. And she says, if I'm going to go pro with this whole superpowers thing, then I got to be super serious. And she looks pretty good, actually, when she puts the costume on. She thinks, I know white's not great camouflage, but it's what the good guys wear. So she sneaks up behind through the woods, behind the Torkelson garage, and we see that Tull is on the phone, and he's telling somebody he's managed to keep them alive. Once Stanchek fell, the others are easy, and he's like, oh yeah, we captured them all except for the fat girl. She must have ditched them back in New Orleans because she never really matched the others profile-wise. We know that there are anti-Psyot transports on the way, and they'll be ready. And then Tull ends the conversation. And as he heads into the garage where Chris and Torque and Charlene are being held prisoner, Chris says, you know what? I saw you that night in Pittsburgh. You're dull tall. And he responds, yeah, and you're Christine Hathaway. I'd feel sorry for you if I had any feelings. Because you're not really dangerous the way the others are. You've just been caught running with the wrong crowd. And Chris says, you know what? I just realized something when I heard you talking on the phone. You work for Toyo Harada. And Tull's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, yeah, I just figured it out. You don't even know that you work for Toyo Harada. But how could you have tracked us here? Meanwhile, Torque's laying on the ground saying, this sucks. It's like, yeah, you didn't know about Torkelson. You didn't know about the list. You didn't even know we were chasing that list. Only Harada knew that. So no, somebody told you that we would be here. And yeah, how did you know about Faith or Charlene? And it's just a coincidence that the last time you found Peter, it was at the very same moment that Harada approached him, right? Why are you so underprepared that night and so overprepared now? Yeah, you work for Harada and don't even know it. You weren't supposed to take Peter then. You were just supposed to scare him. You were just supposed to show him that he was threatened out there and couldn't keep himself safe, so he would turn to the Harada Foundation. But now that Harada's pissed off, then yeah, he'll use whatever means necessary to capture Pete. He's like, how can this not be so obvious to you, Tull? And Tull ignores it all and says, I'm afraid I have no memory of the last time you and I met, Hathaway, and I'm not equipped to play your games. And then he tells the PRS troops to gag that woman. So despite his lack of emotion, despite his lack of memory, you can tell that Chris did get to him. Then he heads to what's left of the trailer that Torque and his brother lived in, and we see Pete is there. He's hooked up to some sort of machine that alters his brain patterns. It basically changes them into delta waves and keeps it on a loop, so Pete's not able to concentrate. And as he sits down in front of Pete, he says, you know what, my superiors tell me I've been chasing you for a long time, and this is my moment. I finally caught you, and you've repeatedly wiped my memory, and you leave me with nothing but the most literal aspects of language. And so they'll find me, they'll take me in, they'll teach me again and again about you, and after I've learned as much as I need, they put me back on the hunt. And, you know, even a person with severe amnesia is capable of emotion, but not me. You wiped me clean too many times. And they tell me this is actually freedom, because I have no history, no memory, no desires, no personality even. And maybe it is. How should I know? I don't have the feelings. I don't have feelings about that one way or the other. But the question is, am I angry about what you've done? No. Again, I have no feelings. All I know is you. But they're coming, Peter. They're coming to pick you up really soon, and they'll take you someplace safe, and they'll pull out that weapon of mass destruction you call a brain, and that'll be the end of you. And then what happens to me? I don't really know. And he walks out of the trailer. So kind of interesting. It's like he wants to confront Peter. He almost wants to gloat. This is the end of a journey. The only thing he's ever known is chasing Peter because he has been wiped so many times. So it is almost like he wants to appreciate the fact that he's succeeded, that he's accomplished his goal, the only thing he's ever known. But like he says, he doesn't have the emotions. He doesn't have the memories of just how long he's been chasing Peter. So just like he says to Chris that he's not equipped to play her games, he's not really equipped to really appreciate that he's accomplished his goal. It's kind of sad in a way. Meanwhile, Faith, as I said, she snuck through the woods, and so she's near the trailer, and she's looking in the window, and she sees Pete there, hooked up to this machine, and thinking about how badly he needs help. He looks really messed up, and the trailer's obviously guarded, but she's thinking, I can fly up really, really high and come down on top of the trailer without being seen. But what if they take her powers away? She could fall again. She could fall from very, very high up, and obviously she's worried about that. And it reminds her of, again, that first night when she had her powers, when she reached the side of the Harada conglomerate's building in Pittsburgh, and literally the outside walls had been, or at least the part where she was at, had been sheared away from the fight between Peter and Harada, and she was there thinking about how she's sort of trapped, how's she going to get down. She didn't know what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, Peter fell past her. And she was like, he's definitely falling, not flying. And I wasn't even sure if he was still alive. And she knew what she had to do. She didn't care what happened to her anymore. And she's not saying that she wasn't scared. She totally was scared because she had just gotten these powers and she didn't know how fast she could go or how high she could fly and if she'd be able to stop Pete's fall or would, you know, she catch up to Pete and try to stop him and he would just drag her down with him. Yeah, so it was really scary. But again, to Faith, being a hero is important. And this is what heroes do, right? They risk, they sacrifice, they throw themselves into the void for strangers without a second thought, is the way she puts it. And so she was able to catch up to Pete. And she says, yeah, heroes, they hold the line of compassion for other human beings in a world built on chaos. And there's only one reason she feels like that she didn't go to the great cosmic Comic-Con in the sky when her mom and dad died in the car crash. Like, why did she survive? She's still here because the world needs her, because she has a purpose. And so that's enough to make up her mind about what to do now. She says, my name is Zephyr, and I'm a superhero. And she does indeed fly far up above the trailer, and she floats down behind it without being seen. And she's able to squeeze through a window, and she disconnects Peter from all the little electrodes that are on his forehead. And Pete starts yelling, and she's trying to quiet him down, saying, on the down low, on the down low. And right away, Pete starts to recover and tells her that she's amazing. And it's so funny to see what Zephyr says. This is what's real, right? Which is sort of a realistic depiction of what's happening. Pete sort of has some drool coming out of his mouth. He's starting to recover. Faith's, hands on shoulders, excited that he's able to recover and so quickly. But in her mind, what she sees is, hearts in their eyes, hearts all around, Pete smiling, her smiling. And again, it goes to show kind of the positive outlook and the way Faith always looks on the bright side, sometimes to a fault, you could say, but she's certainly an inspiration. So Faith is getting Peter back on his feet, we see outside that the anti-Psyot transports have arrived, and as they land, more troops file out of the back of these transports, and Tull says, all right, let's ship these delinquents out of here, and we get the blurb for next issue, ladies and gentlemen, the Renegades. So it's a really great issue. Obviously, they didn't recruit anyone new this issue, and it's very much a Faith-centric issue. We get sort of the origin of Faith, the reason she is so positive, the reason she sort of always looks on the bright side of things. And I do like the way that Dysart gives her a reason for being so immersed in pop culture beyond just, oh, she loves it, and that whole stereotypical person who loves comics kind of thing. And it's also interesting that right about the time this is happening in our world is when comics are finally starting to become accepted on a greater level, being that, comics and comic book movies are certainly at the center of pop culture now. And it was really starting to become that way back when this came out in 2012. But you also have to remember that when Faith is sort of thinking back to her secret origin of things, this was, 10 years ago. So when you start talking about the early 2000s, 2002, 2003, it wasn't that way. It was still, I don't want to say frowned upon, but it was something that wasn't as cool. It wasn't cool to love comics and that kind of stuff, at least not accepted in the way that it was in 2013 when this issue came out, and certainly not the way that it is now, where just about every TV show, movie, what have you, they're all based on comic properties. So it does sort of show how this love of these pop culture things could sort of alienate Faith, sort of keep her separated and not in the in crowd with the popular kids. And like I mentioned, like the way she looks, she's overweight, She doesn't dress in, you know, the really cool clothes or anything. She lives with her grandmother. I mean, these aren't things that are going to endear her to, you know, the popular kids in high school. Because, again, she's her own person. She's a little bit nerdy, a little bit dorky in, you know, the way she talks and the way she holds herself. And, you know, that's just her personality. And also, it's not really cool to be super positive all the time. You know, you don't have that teenage angst that will endear you to other people, other teenagers who are maybe trying to be rebellious and, you know, fight the man or what have you, right? That's not the cool thing to do, is not to follow the rules and to be super happy all the time like Faith is. I imagine that can get sort of annoying at times. And even with Faith, sometimes I think it's too much. But she certainly is inspirational. She certainly is the character in the Valiant universe who others, they don't necessarily look to, but others are inspired by. Because I think that Faith is sort of inspirational without trying to be. I mean, she is just herself. She is just true to herself all the time. And it sort of rubs off on other people. I don't know that she necessarily thinks of herself as this this beacon of hope. She's just herself, and who she is a hopeful person, is a positive person, even in the face of overwhelming odds. And when others look to her, they can say, you know what, if this person can do it, then I can do it. Maybe not to the extent, maybe not in the same way, but I can certainly try. And so I going back and rereading these early issues of Harbinger with how far Faith has come, and, you know, having read recently the Faith and Dreamside series, I have a more respect for Faith than I did before. I guess maybe a greater appreciation for who she is, because right from the start when she was in this Harbinger series, a lot of people loved her. She was their favorite. They were talking about how inspirational and positive that she was. And I never really, I mean, I didn't dislike her by any stretch, but she never really, it never really resonated with me as much as going back, I suppose, with the perspective of having seen the things that she's gone through since the Harbinger series ended, and going back and rereading these old issues, and especially this one with her origin, it does remind me of sort of where she came from and her evolution as a character. So I think she'll continue to be a really popular character in the Valiant universe. She'll continue to inspire. Because another huge aspect of Faith, and I mentioned it here, Tull mentions we caught everybody except for the fat girl. And, you know, Faith herself mentions that she wanted to put on the costume because she felt like the Harbinger Foundation costume, because she felt that it was slimming. And it's obviously an aspect of who she is as a character. You know, her weight, she's overweight. She's not the typical hero in terms of the way she looks. You know, female heroes, especially in the 90s when Faith was first created in the first Harbinger series from Valiant's first go around, that 90s bad girl art, you know, super tiny waist and big chests and big booties, that was not Faith, right? So she was somebody that people that were actually like her, like female comic book fans who might be overweight and didn't look like Danger Girl or Fairchild from Gen 13. It was somebody that they could look to. Here I am reading about somebody who maybe is a little bit overweight and is still a hero. So in that way, I think she inspires as well. And I'm glad when Valiant brought her back, they kept that aspect of her. They didn't slim her down. They kept her looking real. I mean, I think it's much more likely that you're going to see somebody just walking around on the street in the real world that looks like Faith, as opposed to seeing somebody that looks like Fairchild or Danger Girl or Supergirl or whoever, right? I mean, those people don't even exist. Like, physically, those dimensions are not possible. You know, their waists are like smaller than their heads. It just doesn't, it's not reality. And so the fact that Faith is much more closely, from a visual standpoint, much more closely resembles what you would see in the real world, and gives fans who more closely resemble a Faith than they do a Fairchild, it gives them something to cosplay as and something to kind of be inspired by, you know? And I think that's an important aspect of Faith as well. It's important when we're reading these stories, these fictions that help us escape reality, that you feel represented. There's somebody you can relate to, not only in ideas and philosophies, but also in the way that they look. I've seen a lot of great Faith cosplay over the years, and I think that's great. I think that these are probably, at least some of these people are probably ones who wouldn't have dreamed of cosplaying as somebody else because they felt too big, right? Like, they're not going to cosplay as, Supergirl or the Wasp or something like that, because, again, they just don't feel that they have the correct body type for that. And, you know, that's a personal choice. For me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, if you like to cosplay, the body type doesn't necessarily have to match. But for some of these people, you know, there's a stigma attached to it, and maybe they didn't feel comfortable cosplaying as somebody else. And now they have that chance to connect and to share in this love of pop culture in a way that maybe they always have wanted to, but have never felt comfortable doing. So it's just one more aspect of sort of the inclusionary nature of Valiant. And they were doing this back in 2013. Inclusion and diversity are buzzwords now, 6-7 years later, and that's great. But I love the fact that right from the start, that's what Valiant was all about. And certainly you could apply that to Faith and who she is as a character, in terms of the way she looks, but also in the terms of her philosophy and her positivity and her hopefulness. And so, great job. I had much more appreciation for this issue. And this is probably, I don't know, the fourth or fifth time I've done a reread of Harbinger, but this issue and Faith's origin and her philosophy resonated with me more than it ever has before. So maybe it's just that there's so much negativity going on in the world politically and socially right now that I really needed a dose of positivity, and Faith is certainly that. So next time we'll be talking about Harbinger number 10. We'll see if the Renegades are able to escape the clutches of PRS. So hope you guys all join me for that. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network. So when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites. And finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.